All right, welcome back everyone to the Whitetail Theories podcast. Today on the mics, we got Brady Carey and Evan Thread, owners, founders of Catalyst Outdoors and the Great White Buffalo Sticks. What's going on, fellas?
Not a whole lot, just taking a break from the shop to come out and hang out.
Nice, nice. It's been a, you guys just mentioned to me before we got on air here that it's been a crazy time and things look like they're getting even crazier. How are things in your world? Like, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about your background, what you guys kind of do for a living, so on and so forth. If you guys can do that.
There's some things we can talk about, some things that we can't, but I guess in specific, we're CNC machinists in the aerospace world. And, we make some stuff that like flies around and stuff. I don't really want to get too far in because we got a bunch of guys at work that like to listen to this. So just want to make sure we're covering our bases, you know.
Completely understandable. So you guys make some pretty cool shit, needless to say, where for your regular day job. So tell me about kind of how you brainstormed and got into the whole concept of wanting to come up with a climbing stick.
I think that's going to be Evan's field because he kind of started the whole shebang there.
Yeah. So to kind of start from the beginning, hunted on and off growing up on some like private ground down in Kentucky out of the ground blinds and got out of it around high school when I started getting big into golf and found that in Illinois where I live, getting permission on land that you don't own is next to impossible because where we're at's real popular getting leased by dudes from the South and the Northeast and everybody with money. So I kind of got out of it. And then around my first year of college, I found out that like public land was a thing and that you didn't need to lease something or go get permission. So I went and bought the typical hang on and some 8-pound steel sticks from the farm implement store in town and hunted with that for a couple of years and even did some hang and hunt stuff with a setup that weighed north of 40 pounds and was killing deer. So come the spring of 2019, I thought there's got to be a better way to do this. And watching all kinds of people on YouTube, all the big players, and they started running all these crazy aluminum sticks and, you know, cast aluminum hang-ons, and there were a couple people out there in early homemade saddles and that type of thing that I was seeing. And I thought, man, you know, hanging and hunting, it works because the no pressure in the area previously, and the deer have never been hunted like that in any of the public areas that I live around. And looking at the prices for the sticks that were out there, it was just absurd as, you know, a part-time worker, part-time college student to afford 3 or 4 of the sticks that were available out there. So I thought, you know, I should just make my own. I'm a machinist. I have access to the tools and equipment.
Well, I don't know if they were necessarily absurd in price, but for the quality you were getting. From our standpoint of what we do for a living, yeah, the quality and the price was very far off at the time. So, yeah, that makes sense. I didn't want to interrupt because that needed to be stated.
So I drew up some quick designs over the course of about a week, working on it 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and then some other people that work at the company we work at kind of asked, like, hey, all these people have got these really cool aluminum climbing sticks. You think we could make those? And I said, well, how convenient. I've got some designs written up. So we pulled some money together, and I made our first batch of sticks and got them done, I think, August of 2019. And hunted with them that fall. They were heavy. You could run them over with a Mack truck, and they would be completely fine. But, you know, a sub-2-pound aluminum stick at the time was really nothing to shake a stick at. And, you know, killed my biggest buck, public or otherwise, last year on a hanging hunt. And it's been kind of off to the races ever since. You know, just chasing the next best thing.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely seems like the climbing stick market has really, really catapulted as far as chasing the next best thing in the last 2 years or so. Where along the lines did you fellas find the need, or like what was lacking? I know you had mentioned quality, Brady, but like what did you identify was like your niche in the market?
Well, I mean, you've met me before, Torn. I'm not a very big guy. I mean, I'm 6 foot tall, 160 pounds. And, you know, around the time that Evan started making his climbing sticks, you know, some of the comparable sticks on the market, I could put them together and flex the two tubes together with my hands. You know, I could physically bend sticks, and I didn't trust it, to be quite frank with you. You know, yeah, they're rated 300 pounds and all this good stuff, and they've had multiple tests and all that good stuff. I understand that, but when I can physically bend them with my bare hands, not jumping up and down on them, I just didn't trust it. And Evan Sticks, on the other hand, after he got done with his first set, you know, like he said, you could have ran those things over with a Mack truck, and, I mean, they were solid. That was trustworthy to me. So, I mean, really what sparked it was looking at the quality and knowing the production costs of what the other sticks were running versus what they were selling for. It just made more sense for us to really just make our own line at that point. And then once we realized that there's no need to try and match, you know, anybody else's quality of product, we just decided that, hey, we'd just take it to the next level because we had the capability to make our own, you know, line of sticks that were essentially top notch.
Okay.
So, you know, to break it down in a finite area, there just wasn't what we liked because we're picky kids.
So walk me through the evolution of the prototype to where you're at now.
On which stick?
Let's start with the GWBs, and then we'll go from there.
Well, yeah, I mean, we pretty much started out, you know, kind of talking back and forth with you guys, you know, because you guys were looking for some good sticks, and you and Jimmy and then Brett, you know, we kind of all spitballed off of each other and came up with a good design, and, you know, then everything, I think everything really just picked up the server side and everybody got busy. And Evan and I just started going off on our own tangent to finish it up and make it, you know, make it the whole stick. But yeah, I mean, it just started as some silly idea of, I think Evan said one day, like, hey, I wonder if we just like make it out of one solid piece of aluminum.
Yeah.
And we both looked at each other and went, no, that's completely stupid. And then 2 days later, we had a finished set of sticks, and we're like, wow, these things are awesome. So
yeah,
that's really the evolution.
I can remember you had posted on the server-side forum that, hey, I have access to some pretty badass machinery. Does anybody want any metal work done? And I was like, I was basically fed up with pretty much all the sticks on the market. There was nothing that really fit my need to the way that I was hunting. And it was kind of like what you went through, Evan, where it was like, well, there's this stuff out there, but it's not so much what I want, and I can kind of make something better. So I'm going to go from there. Well, I have no engineering background, no machining background. And I was like, well, hey, it's worth a shot. I'll reach out to this guy and see what he can do for me. And like, we started brainstorming, come up with some ideas, and then you guys just picked up with it and freaking ran with it, and in my opinion, knocked it completely out of the park. So that's for the people that don't know, and I think there's quite a few out there that maybe haven't seen the Great White Buffaloes or have some questions about them. Let's talk about the niche that those sticks kind of fill.
Okay.
Whoever wants to go first.
So the niche they kind of fill is, as Brady alluded to earlier, some of the prices that people were selling climbing sticks for, whenever we looked at them, and given our background in machining, our education required like manufacturing processes training through all of our college classes. So we got to learn about all the different ways to make things. It wasn't necessarily just cutting metal in a CNC machine. A lot of the sticks we were seeing were all like cast extrusions, which is just an inferior type of finished material, but it's really cheap because with an extrusion mold, kind of like you would extrude Play-Doh out of the little press, there's no waste and it spits out the finished shape. But you end up with weaker material when it's all said and done. And it can be done really cheap in mass numbers like these manufacturers were doing it. And then to see the numbers that they were charging for these sticks when I know that what each of those components cost, yeah, it was kind of led to, well, you know, if you're looking to build a race car, are you looking to go buy a cast aluminum block or a billet aluminum block for your race car? Well, no, billet. Because it's just the way to do things. You can control things like grain structure and like less material impurities that you see with cast materials, especially in the hunting world. It's kind of coming back to bite some people in the butt on block controls. Yeah. And we can control the entire process. It's not a factory or a foundry over in China that is controlling our quality, and we just take their word for it and do a batch receiving inspection and hope nothing faulty went out the door. We can oversee 100% of the product from start to finish. And partially, it was cool because no one else could make a single piece stick because no one had the expertise or the time to machine a single stick out of a solid block of aluminum. Yeah.
Gotcha. And I just want to.
It's kind of a multitude of reasons.
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to jump in here real quick. So basically, everything that kind of Evan said from a scientific and engineering standpoint, how I've noticed how that translates into the timber, how you can see that physically, with these sticks as compared to some of the other sticks that I've used, is because you don't have the flexing. You don't have the bottom of the stick kicking out. When it's on the tree, it's literally rock solid. It's just like a branch. It's an addition to the tree. If you're a saddle hunter, and we'll dive into this more, when you set up that top stick, you can use that top stick as a platform, especially if you're a ring of steps type of guy, where it's locked in. It's not flexing one way or the other, making noise. You don't have to worry about the stick potentially breaking, kicking out from you. All these things that are completely alleviated and give you a peace of mind, not only make for a better hunt, but you're no longer also worried about the type of trees that you can get in. You can get in any tree that you want. It doesn't have to be a tree that's tailor-made to that set of sticks. I assume that you guys have seen that exact same thing in your hunting experiences.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every time you have someone, or have we have someone send us a message, I mean, you know, well, why don't you like those sticks? Oh, well, they kick out, or they creep, or the steps have bent, or, you know, there's always something, and a lot of it comes down to that manufacturing process that Evan was talking about, with just trying to make it as cheap as possible to make revenue as high. And now, there are companies out there, some of the smaller guys that are, you know, well, I'd say smaller guys, I'd say we're one of, if not the smallest guys on the market, but, you know, there's a handful of the companies out here that are obviously doing great jobs, making great products, but some of your box store stuff and, some of the bigger name guys, they're starting to, you know, they're trying to make the process cheaper, trying to do one of two things, either pass on the savings to gain more customers, or they're trying to put more money in their pocket. And, yeah, I mean, it just all came down to quality, quality, quality. You know, we just got tired of it. So we said, well, if we're going to build something for ourselves, let's build something really, really badass. It kind of just, everybody agrees. I mean, it's hard to deny the fact whenever you put one of those great white buffaloes on the tree that it's not superior. There's hours and hours of engineering, not just a, you know, square 1-inch tube with some steps glued to it, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. That's definitely something that I've noticed. I had a thought there. Evan, did you have anything that you wanted to add to that before we kind of transition here?
Not really, no. That was a pretty good explanation.
One of the things that I get hit up with quite a bit as far as questions is the production side of things. So do you guys kind of want to touch on that and let the listeners know, or the potential buyers know, consumers, how you guys handle your production? Do you do it in small batches, and then when they sell out, you're waiting for the next shipment to come in, or so on and so forth? Just talk on that a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's pretty simple. We have a really, really nice machine shop and beautiful CAD software at our disposal, and some awesome tooling. We get to do some really cool stuff where we're at, but, at the end of the day, we make small batches that we can control. Everything goes into a computer system that we have derived that, follows the material all the way back to the mill. We have the metallurgy statistics and all the paperwork from them. We have certifications. All materials are, mag particle inspected and everything before they get to us. And so keeping everything small on the production side has really, really helped us in the fact that it gives us comfort and, it kind of gives us the ability to say, okay, if there is an issue, for say with material, at least we can stop the whole lot and, start from scratch, make sure that, something silly didn't happen. For say, Joe, he ends up buying a set of GWBs, he gets home, and for some ungodly reason, one of them breaks. Okay, cool. Well, I can go back and look at that lot, and I can track who all has that same material with the sticks. So there might be six other people from the same batch of aluminum that have those sticks. So then I can notify them and say, hey, you guys might have contaminated sticks. You might want to send them in, or, be cautious, do what you please, they're your sticks. But we run small batches. This last batch of Carbon Pros that we made, once we got done, we were kind of at the height of hunting season in our area. And regardless of, what we're making and what we're doing, I mean, to be truthful and down to the bone, man, I got to get out in the woods at some point in time. So we took a little bit of time, and we've been using that downtime to do a little bit of hunting and to design some new stuff. So from beginning of production to end of production, it's always going to be a small batch. And once they sell out, we're going to take some time and make sure that we look back and double check our footsteps there to make sure everything was right.
Yeah, and you guys can't be faulted for that. As hunters that are bringing a hunting product to consumers, your consumer has to realize that if they want to keep this product the way it is, high quality, and the engineering behind it, you got to have the small batches, and you guys got to get in the field too, especially if you want anything new coming out as well. That plays a huge role in it.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
So I guess kind of just like the nuts and bolts. So when a batch sells out, it might be a little bit of time until the next batch is in and ready to go out the door.
Yeah, that's a pretty good explanation.
Gotcha. All right, so you kind of touched on it there. Let's talk about the carbons.
Okay.
So hit me up with how you guys, first of all, what even made you want to go with a design of carbon? Because I mean, pretty much until you guys, that was not even really a thing.
So the carbon idea came up almost the same way as the solid piece of billet came up. I said it as a joke.
Yeah, that's very true.
I said, man, there's so much weight in the length of this stick. All we really need is the weight at the end. We wish we could use something lighter. You know, if this was carbon fiber, you could cut ounces and ounces out of this stick and have something that'll hold just as much weight. And, you know, with our work experience, getting to not necessarily work directly with carbon, but see the stuff that it can be used for and the amount of force it can hold, when you realize it's got a better strength to weight ratio than titanium, and it's, you know, thermally stable. So if it's negative 30 degrees, your sticks, they're not going to cause any issues with heating and warming. And
yeah, it was a dumbass idea that turned into something pretty cool. I mean, really fast too. I mean, it was like, what, 3 days after you said that?
It was the amount of time that it took to get a piece of carbon fiber in. We had pieces ready to bolt up whenever the carbon came in the mail.
Yeah. Then we hung 860 pounds from it that night.
Sure. Yeah, something like that.
Let's talk about kind of some of the principles of carbon. And I'm relatively ignorant with it. I've only started kind of researching it lately as I've been looking at carbon limbs for my trad bow. So not all carbon is made equal, and there's various differences in the types of weaves, how it's glued together too, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to let you guys kind of touch on that stuff and then give kind of the consumer, the audience, the whatever here a better understanding of carbon. Cause like you look like just looking at some of the arrows out there that have lesser quality carbon in them, you look how easy they are to break versus some of the more expensive carbon. It's a night and day difference. So you guys are obviously using some of the best carbon that you can get your hands on.
Yeah, I mean, with the market we kind of got into, you know, we wanted to keep away from the idea of saying, well, let's control the price and, you know, we'll try and keep it down and this and that. We just decided, seeing as how we're small time, we would build a higher quality product at a higher price. If that stopped us from selling X amount over, you know, over time, then so be it. At least we could sleep at night knowing that we didn't sell crap product to our customers. But carbon fiber, I mean, we can go really, really deep into how that all works. For the people listening that don't quite understand what carbon fiber is, I'm sure that a lot of people are probably pretty, they probably know about like fiberglass, stuff of that nature. It's essentially just a fiber that is encased in a hardened resin. And essentially, you are using the fiber to stabilize the resin, not vice versa. So, there's different ways that you can go about this, and it's kind of tricky without really seeing it in front of you. But you were speaking of the different ways that the weaves work, different kind of resins, all that good stuff, and there's so many rabbit holes we can go down into them. It's unreal.
Yeah.
But essentially what we're doing is we're using a certain classification. And it's pretty hard to get your hands on as an everyday consumer, is what I'd probably leave that at. But, essentially there is a certain design that's going into the weave. There's a general weave called, you know, a uni weave, there's a bi weave, there's all kinds of good stuff. But
a radial weave.
You can get on RockWest, you can get on all kinds of other suppliers, and you can buy basic carbon fiber that, I mean, if you had some skills and whereabouts, you could probably make it pretty tough. But I don't personally believe that I'd try and climb a tree. tree with it, because the certain weed that we use has been proven time and time again with our, you know, the company that we work with. You know, we build some stuff that gets put under some pretty heavy loads, and essentially there's a pattern in which they lay the direction of the carbon fiber that is specific to us. And we have a 6-lay procedure that we ask to have made when we make our tubes, which allows us to use a smaller diameter and lesser plies, just because we're allowing for side to side, front to front flex, but up and down, you know, laterally, where you'll be putting your weight is supported very, very heavily. So we allow a little bit of flex, which anybody that owns a Carbon Pro has seen it flex. It has to flex. You know, if carbon is rigid, it's broken to a point. Yeah, I mean, you can have so much carbon there that it's just rigid because, you know, there's so much there, but in our aspect, the tubing is so thin that we have to allow it to flex. If it was rigid, for say, we tempered it, or we treated it with something of the nature, you know, maybe like a resin poly or something like that, it would make it rigid and it'll crack. You know, once the resin gives, the carbon gives. So for the people that don't understand carbon, I would highly suggest about a 4-hour stint of either watching YouTube videos or getting on Google. Because, man, there are so many rabbit holes to go down there. I don't think we'd have enough time in the podcast to explain it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you guys pretty much hit the main points that I basically wanted to cover. I just wanted to identify that this isn't carbon that you guys are pretty much just buying straight from a factory in Korea and shipping it over, throwing some resin on it, and making it into a tube. There's a lot more that goes into it just from the little research that I've done with trad limbs, as far as like the stability, like you said, how much the carbon flexes, because you do need it to flex. But from some of the research that I was doing, it was like incredible, some of the torsional stability that carbon has compared to some of the like the other metals. And then obviously in the realm of trad bows, wood that's out there, it was pretty mind-blowing seeing the data.
Oh yeah, carbon is unreal. You know, the very first design of the Carbon Pro we had was like 13 ounces or something stupid.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm pretty sure there's a video on our Instagram page that shows us hanging 700 and some odd pounds from it before it breaks the pallet that Jeez. All the concrete was sitting on. And then later down the road, we kind of doubled up and, you know, made a little more rigid platform and started loading more weight to it until we finally broke it. So, I don't know, it was well over 800 pounds, I know that.
Yeah.
But carbon's weird, man. It's a weird animal. If you haven't played with it, if you don't have experience in it, you really need to research what you're getting into, because, like you said, it's not just something that you go out and just buy carbon. It's not all the same.
Right.
You know, we're pretty lucky in the fact that we do have some pretty decent experience with the carbon, and, you know, our manufacturers, they know us, they know the company we work for, they know the people internally, so we do have good connections to where we can call and talk about what we need. And, you know, we've had some really, really nice people help us out, make sure that we're getting the right certifications and making sure that we have all the traceable paperwork. That's the hard stuff to do, especially when you're just buying cheap tubing from Korea. You know, you never know what you're getting. We do. Yeah. You know, we have inspections. We have everything on record. So that's kind of what sets us aside on that.
So what are... Let's take a step back here. What is the total weight of the GWBs, and then what's the weight of the carbons?
A single GWB is like, what, 1.75 pounds?
Yeah, I think the last one I put on the scale was right at 1 pound 12, or no, sorry. Yeah, 1 pound 12 ounces.
Something like that, yeah. And then, the Carbon Pros, as they sit right now, are 14.5, but we're getting ready to play that game again here soon. Start cutting some numbers.
So there's a potential 2.0 coming for 2021.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. All right. So that is currently your only two offerings, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the new stuff you already mentioned that there's going to be potentially a 2.0 that's in the works currently. And I've heard some rumors of a platform. Is that something that we can talk about?
Yeah, why not?
All right. So let's talk about this platform. I've seen the prototypes. I'm pretty excited about it. I can't wait to get my hands on it. Where did this concept stem from? Kind of go into like the design, so on and so forth.
So essentially, we have a certain machine that we like to build the platforms on, particularly because it's very fast, it's rigid, and it's the perfect size for what we wanted. So we started at the point where everybody else kind of starts. What does everybody want? Well, there's a lot of great platforms out there, and does the market really need one? Not particularly. But something that nobody else has on the market is a billet CNC platform. So Evan and I sat down and we started hashing it out. And then we just thought, well, while we have it in the machine and we have it under control, why don't we just do something cool with it and, kind of make it our own. And it's hard to not copy a design these days. Because every platform is the same basic concept. You're just strapping something to a tree so you can stand on it while you're saddle hunting or, whatever it might be. So we just kind of reinvented the wheel and kind of played around with not so much the overall design of the platform, but the functionality. And basically, wrapping that all together, we found out how to, make the machine running as well as our design copacetic with a program to make them pretty fast and make them pretty light and make them pretty durable. But they're pretty cool. They're just a CNC billet chunk that we mill down, and we decided to add one really cool feature, which I think everybody will like, is we've made everything modular on a platform design. So it's going to be a four-piece design, with there being a base, an attachment, a post, and then, the teeth up top to dig into the tree. Essentially, you'll be able to take four bolts out of the attachment, and instead of buying a whole new platform, paying for the whole shebang, we can now essentially just make you a different plate to go on the bottom. So the base, being what you put your feet on, standard is going to be 7x14, 8x14 overall, but really you're only standing on 7x14 inches. We have a bigger model that we're currently testing and playing around with, and it'll bolt right up. So let's say you buy the 7x14 and you decide, wow, I really want to go to 12x14 or something of that nature. Instead of buying a whole platform for X amount of dollars, you can just buy the plate, bolt it onto your existing attachment, and now you're set. So you save yourself a couple bucks instead of having to buy this, sell that, do that. It'll just be a cheaper option to have more options for you, really.
Right.
So that's pretty nice. And then,
yeah, dude, that's freaking awesome, because if you're a hunter that travels from state to state, and like maybe you're hunting, you're from the mid-Atlantic region where I'm at here, and you're going out to the Midwest, you might be hunting some larger trees like cottonwoods, things like that, where you're going to need a bigger base. and then you head up north in north central Pennsylvania and you're hunting like pole timber and stuff like that, where you can get away with a smaller base. That's freaking super smart. I like that idea, fellas.
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily more for the hunting stuff. I'm a pretty big advocate of the ring stabs.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's light, mobile, and well, I mean, if you're saddle hunting, I personally believe that the intricacies of platforms and all that stuff has kind of overshadowed what saddle hunting is actually for. I believe that some things are more for comfort than they are, hunting, and more for the Instagram pictures than they are for hunting. And a lot more people are just figuring out unique ways to climb as opposed to how to hunt. So,
without a doubt,
it's a catch-22 because we want to make a cool product, but at the same time, we want to make it usable to the person that's actually trying to hunt, not just trying to get the Instagram photos, you know. And that's where the modular side of it came out because, hey, man, you can pack these plates pretty cheap. They get pretty, pretty small when you're, for say, packing them in a bag or a tote or whatever you're, traveling with. So, like you said, if you're hunting tiny, small trees where you don't want to have that big honking platform sticking out, cool, run your small one. If you're looking to be comfortable that day, for say it's a all-day rut run or something, well, big platforms might be nice. You know, I'm an advocate of the ring of steps, so I do enjoy the platform when I'm on those all-day sets, though. They are a little more comfortable.
So, Evan, I know that you are a big fan of the platform over the ring of steps. Do you want to kind of touch on that a little bit as to why you like the platform over the ring of steps?
So, as far as an entry point to get into saddle hunting, it's familiar. You've sat in a hang-on 1,000 times. It's a mini hang-on, and you stand on it, but there's no seat. It was familiar. My big honking muck boots that I wear all year round because of some of the stuff I'm having to walk through to, get into a tree. They fit on it easier. The ring of step options that are really available right now, they're not that great in my opinion. You end up with stuff with quality issues made out of steel that people are having break off under their feet, or plastic that creaks whenever you put pressure on it. The attachment methods are, kind of hard to stealthily put up a ratchet strap into a tree if you're trying to hunt a buck there. The platform, for me, it was a quieter option. It was familiar, and when I got into saddle hunting, it just made sense versus the ring of steps. And there's advantages to both, but I think that trying to get people to transition into a new style of hunting, having the level of familiarity there is very helpful.
Well, why don't you touch on the advantages that you find for both, and then Brady, I'll let you talk about why you like the ring of steps over the platform.
So a big reason that coming into it I preferred the platform was just the ease of setting it up. I would pull it out of the pocket of my backpack while I hung there on my lineman's rope, put it on the tree, run my strap around, and then you stand on it.
Yeah.
There wasn't the whole pull out the wrapped up ratchet strap with six steps on it, clang them, hit them on everything, make all kinds of noise, run your ratchet strap around, and then click it tight. Which, I mean, that's getting better now, but I think being able to simply put it on the tree and attach your strap, it's quicker, it's less work hanging from the tree. If you're on, it works on almost any size tree. You're not having to worry about, being on a smaller tree and you have 8 foot of slack on your strap for your ring of steps. It's blowing around in the wind and trying to tie it off so that you don't have a big flag waving to that buck. Hey, there's a dude up in this tree. I just think that it's easier to set up, and that's probably 90% of the reason that I prefer it.
You're 100% accurate there.
Where it suffers is mobility. As far as truly shooting 360, I've found that on any tree bigger than 12-ish inches. You're not truly shooting 360 unless you're doing some pretty wild gymnastics that I'm not athletically capable of. Whereas a ring of steps, you just walk around the tree. But, I mean, I found such an advantage of, like, shooting mobility, switching to a saddle from a hang-on, that, oh, no, I can only shoot around 340 degrees of the tree, whereas before I could, you know, maybe 220.
So let me ask you this, Evan, and maybe because we've had this discussion before and we've talked about this for hours, and maybe I'm just overthinking it. So with a platform, let's say you get on one of those big oak trees, right? Like, yep. There's only a couple oaks dropping and the deer are all coming into these few oak trees, and that's the tree that you got to be in. Is it a deal breaker for you to take the platform and put it in that tree and maybe lose like a little bit of shooting versus being able to put a ring of steps in there? Because I keep going back and forth and maybe I'm just overlooking it.
So most of the stuff that I get to hunt, any tree that I'm climbing isn't big enough for that to be an issue. Mm. I shot a buck in fall of 2019 off of a platform that was big enough that my cam strap didn't have any slack.
Jeez.
If that can kind of tell you the size. So it might not be as big as some of the stuff that you're having hunt there in PA on all these old oak ridges, but it was a pretty sizable tree. And there were, really, I just kind of played the statistical odds whenever I went to go set that setup, that the part that I can't shoot from where I put this platform, where is the deer least likely to come from?
Mm-hmm.
And where is the deer less likely to give me a shot opportunity? And I just made sure that I could shoot where the deer was highly probable of where they were going to stand if I were to get an opportunity. And in this case, that was some taller grass. If a deer were in there anyway, I'm not going to get a shot at it. But if that moves to my left or right more than 15, 20 feet, I can either do the spin around like a ninja and get a shot standing on my platform back to the tree, or swing around like normal and pull off a regular, 2 o'clock shot. But I think saddle hunting off of the platform gives you enough ability to hide and put the tree between you and the deer, that if the deer is somewhere where you can't get a shot opportunity, well, since it's in where you can't get an opportunity at a shot, it also can't see. So as long as your wind's not bad, the odds that it's going to spook are lower relative to a big giant hang-on where you stick out like a sore thumb.
Right.
And the deer's, in my experience, a little more likely to hang around and move to where you can get a shot. So in my hunting, I haven't found it to be too big of an issue.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just overthinking it. So, like, for example, this past season, I had a huge 6-point come in, and it came in on the weak side, and I couldn't get around, actually, my ring of steps quick enough and then get my hips twisted to be able to take that shot. But if I had a platform, I would have been able to do the ninja spin and make that shot cleaner on that deer. So I ended up missing an opportunity because I was in the ring of steps. But then I've also had the same circumstance where I needed to walk around the tree to get a shot. So I've been constantly fighting that whole idea of, like, my buddies tell me to get a platform, and I've been fighting that whole idea back and forth of which is better, which do I want to stick with? And I guess, like, it's six in one hand, half a dozen in the other. But Brady, I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
So I'm a pretty big advocate of the ring of steps. And of course, Catalyst, we're going to be making our own ring of steps. Just a little bit beefier. The weight doesn't really bother me all that much because I can have 6 steps and it's still sub 3 pounds with the strap. I'm using a 2-inch OCB, and all that good stuff. I don't know. I think a lot of it just happened because I kind of drank the Eberhardt Kool-Aid there for a little while. And, you know, then I fell off of it, and then I came back. For kind of one of those reasons of the opposite of what you were just talking about, I was in a big tree on some public land and just couldn't get a shot off because I couldn't get around mm-hmm. the tree. If I had my ring of steps, I felt very confident in the fact that I could have at least gotten around and just taken my normal shot. So Evan probably knows this from all of our duck hunting and goose hunting and stuff. I kind of self-sabotage myself so that I'm forced to hide better or watch myself. You know, one of the things you don't do when you're duck and goose hunting is like have anything shiny on. And, you know, my favorite duck gun is like really shiny. And that just forces me to hide better, forces me to keep my head down, you know, not be staring at ducks and, you know, all that good stuff. Well, it's the same with deer hunting. I'm a paranoid human and I kind of self-sabotage myself in the sense that I 100% refuse to make myself look like anything lesser than a tree. But I don't want to wear camo. A lot of my hunting clothes are more of the hiking, you know, camping stuff, because it's a lot like packs.
Mm-hmm.
Hunting packs are very, very expensive for no real reason when there are hiking packs out there that are the exact same thing at a fraction of the cost. And that's how all my hunting clothes are. I wear a lot of solid colors, mismatched. I don't really particularly care about the look of them, but something in my brain tells me that I need to hide better. And the ring of steps gets you closer to the tree. I essentially have I have six steps, and I always try and put steps at 3 and at 9. And that forces me to put my knees at 3 and 9 on the tree and kind of hug the tree. It keeps me closer. Keeps my profile slimmer. And I could be overthinking it to no end. It could just be the paranoia of these, you know, crazy Indiana elusive deer that, you know, don't really exist. But I don't know. It's almost like a self-sabotage of comfort versus being stealthy. I see some of these pictures on, for say, the Saddle Hunter forums of people hanging, you know, 4 feet from a tree on a, you know, giant platform. And you've completely defeated the purpose at this point. You stick out farther than you do on a hang on. you're skylit to no end. I've never understood it. Now, obviously, there are people that do it right. People that are on platforms that do it right, and you can see it every day. There's always somebody posting pictures on the Saddle forums. But I see a lot of guys that, man, oh man, yeah, I just really like leaning back in this thing. And you're thinking, man, you look like a giant blob in the trees right now, and you don't think a deer can't see your ass right now? Yeah, they can see you.
It's kind of the same reason that when I'm in a saddle, I don't like to use the recliner band.
Yeah. Yeah,
because you're not hidden at that point. I like mm-hmm. to stay up close to the tree, hug it, look more like what might be a knot on the tree 20 foot up instead of a person, like you said, standing 4 feet away from the tree.
Yeah.
When you guys – go ahead. Sorry, Brady.
Well, I mean, but – and I mean, maybe it's, again, just the paranoia or whatever, but Evan and I are highly successful in our area, so I mean – maybe it's just, I mean, maybe we're going too far, because I know people that kill bigger deer than I do from the same damn ladder stand every year. But, you know, maybe it's just a paranoia thing, but it obviously works. So.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to overthinking scenarios. Like, and maybe it's just the way that we're wired too, as far as like the next best thing, but not so much that we're like always trying to chase like, chase the better rabbit. It's more of like how can I be a more efficient predator, and then like that's the rabbit that we're chasing. So,
Oh yeah. That's a hard, no matter what you do as a hunter. If you're not trying to be a better predator, you shouldn't be hunting.
Exactly. But I think there's a huge mix up between that, where it's like you're trying to chase the next best thing to make up for deficiencies in your field craft or your hunting ability, versus chasing the rabbit of trying to be a better predator, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're trying to compensate for your shitty hunting skills.
Exactly. Exactly. Like the system that I'm running right now, where I'm using your stick as my platform, and then I have four ring of steps, two on each side, and I can walk around almost an entire tree, is super efficient, great for what I do. I can get on, like I said, almost any size tree, and I am sucked right into the bark of the tree that I'll literally have, like, if a deer looks up at me, it's looking directly through me. Like, it can't figure out what I am. I mean, I've had that happen like 3 or 4 times this year.
Yeah, it's some crazy stuff. Saddle hunting world is different, man. I've been in a lot of hang-ons in my life and seen a lot of deer spook. I don't know. Maybe it was just a good year this year, but statistically speaking, I can get pretty well hidden, so not a lot of spooking, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt. So, with your platform, you guys had mentioned that you're going to be coming out with some ring of steps too. Now, I think I saw in the original prototype that the platform and the ring of steps are going to be able to be incorporated. That's correct?
Yeah. So we have kind of hybridized, just kind of to satisfy both Evan and I, really, kind of meet in the middle, because yeah, during an all-day rut hunt, which luckily I didn't have to do any this year, but you know, I can only assume that, you know, a platform is platform's going to be more comfortable. And you know, Evan, I know he went on 1 or 2 good old rut hunts, so platforms are nice. But hey, if you got to get around the tree, why not have a ring of steps? I see some guys online that, you know, add some extra straps, and they're trying to put ring of steps on their cam strap for their, you know, camming platform, and might work once, but once you move that strap down the tree, you lose your camming effect and all that good stuff. So we just decided to hybridize. Essentially now there'll be a slot in our platform that will allow you to run a, you know, strap through the post, either before or after it's been cammed. I prefer after, just to be able to put your ring of steps where you want them with ease, not be fumbling with stuff. And we're looking to sell that as a package as well. So you'll get, you know, 2 to 4, however many you need. I can't imagine that you'd need many more than, you know, 2 or 3. But yeah, it's pretty nice to have the comfort of the platform to stand on, and then the 2 or 3 ring of steps, just in case you need to get around to the other side of the tree.
Now, are your steps going to be basically notched so that you'll be able to hook the steps into the band? Or are they going to have to already
really
be in?
We haven't decided on that idea yet, but the way that I do it is it's just a slot, and the steps stay on the strap.
Gotcha.
I think Evan likes it. Yeah, I think he's made a couple steps the other direction to give that a try, and it's worked with some success.
So the issue you run into there is that you don't go to put that type of step on until after your platform's cammed over.
Mm-hmm.
And once your platform's cammed over, you can put the step on that little slack area where there's open space.
Mm-hmm.
But to get that to, say, if you're facing the tree and it's a clock face, to get that step to 2 o'clock, you've already cammed your strap, so it's tight to the tree. You don't can't necessarily slide that step to the backside of the tree.
Gotcha.
Once your platform's cammed over.
Gotcha.
So leaving them on the strap all the time, you can't lose them. If you do it right, it can be like hilariously quiet compared to what you think it would be.
Yeah.
And you can have everything in position before you ever go to cam your platform.
Right. Yeah, I was curious if you guys had that figured out or not, because I was thinking that you'd run into the exact same issues of the strap being tight when you cam it over and then trying to notch that in there and then having to fight that strap, even if you got it off of the post where you have that little bit of space from the tree, you're still going to be fighting the tree bark to try to slide it around the backside of the tree, depending upon how many ring of steps you're putting on the tree, if that makes sense.
I've made that work doing some sets in the backyard, like late summer, early fall, on some notch steps that you add in after it's cammed over. But I ended up having to stand on a stick, uncam the platform to get some slack, and then work the step to the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just a lot of work. A lot of noise, and it ended up, I think, being the right decision on our part to go ahead and make it one cohesive unit that stays together in your pack.
Yeah.
Instead of separate pieces.
Yeah, I like that too. We're working on an hour here. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was the decision that you guys went with as far as producing the length of your sticks. So I've always kind of been an advocate for longer sticks because you can get higher until I got your guys' sticks. And now I'll never go back.
So this is another one of those, we had like a dumb shit moment where we were like, what if we just made a really tiny stick? That'd be hilarious. Ha ha ha. And then 45 minutes later, I was like 18 foot in a tree with three sticks. And I was like, oh man.
Yeah. Those sticks were like 14 inches long.
Yeah.
From end to end. And we actually, none of this on a Facebook saddle hunting forum, oh, check it out, I'm 18 feet in a tree. We took a tape measure and put it at 3 feet. And he was 18 feet up in a tree with three sticks that were 14 inches long.
Dude, it's mind-blowing once you figure it out how to do it and like that you're actually capable of doing that. Like, you get over the initial hump that mind block has. Like, with four of your sticks at 17 inches, I can get to 30 feet. And like you said, tape measure down.
For anyone listening, Torun's like 6'12" or something like that. You know, he's just crazy tall and like, you know, athletic. I'm 6 foot tall. I'm pretty beat up human. So, but I mean, yeah, you think about these long sticks and the fact that, you know, a 30, 31 inch stick, whatever it might be, hey, that's great. If you're using them, keep using them, man. Plenty of people have killed deer with them. But, you know, you can take a 17-inch stick and use an aider that is 17 inches long from the bottom step to where you're stepping on, and you essentially have a 34-inch stick.
Exactly.
Except it's half the stick.
Yeah, you're carrying half the material in that little piece of climbing webbing or hemp steel rope or steel cable, it just is the other half of the stick. So you can effectively double the length of some of these shorter sticks with a simple aider and make it something that's really easy to climb because you're not having to take long strides up the tree.
Yep.
Whereas if you had a 24-inch long overall stick, by the time my original set was that long, and by the time you get into late winter, you're wearing puffy pants, a big coat, my fat ass had trouble, you know, getting up those sometimes.
Yeah.
Whereas a 17-inch stick.
Yeah, no problem.
It's just no big deal.
No big deal.
You can fly right up the tree. You can climb quicker. You can climb easier. If you're a scent guy, you're not working near as hard to get up the tree. So you're not, you know, sweating, producing any scent. I'd argue it's quieter because it's easier.
Without a doubt.
At least in our eyes.
Yeah,
there's some people, you know, say, oh, well, I'm 6'8". I still want a 24-inch stick because it's just as easy for me to climb that as it is for you guys to climb a 17-inch stick. And to that, I say touche.
That was me in the beginning when you guys were first making them. Like, I wanted a big one. And then, like, Brady was talking to me about getting a smaller one. And then I switched over. And I am so glad I did.
Yeah. Well, it's actually pretty cool. You actually have the shorter design. So we have a standard 20-inch stick, and that's what 99% of our customers have.
Yeah.
And you're rocking 17-inch step-to-step, which, you know, if you want to get into you know, an engineering standpoint, a shorter stick is going to be more stable.
Mm-hmm.
There's less leverage for kick out. It's a shorter stick, so there's less ability for flex. I can keep going. But, yeah, man, the Great White Buffaloes and 17 inches, those are the most badass sticks on the market. I don't care what anyone says. They pack up better than anything else. They look better. The engineering aspect is awesome. That's our heart and souls in that stick, man. You know, it sounds silly and it's such a niche market, but we're not looking to sell to the masses. We're looking to sell to the people that, you know, want to have a stick for the rest of their life and not have to worry about it. And I mean, you can speak to that fact. I feel pretty strongly it's going to be a long time before you ever have to do anything with those sticks.
Right. Exactly. Without a doubt. 100%. I mean, so,
to back up a little bit, part of where I think that the short stick kind of came into favor with the community as a whole was everybody claims that they're a kick-ass mountain hunter and they hike 3 miles uphill both ways into their spot through briars and swamp. Well, if you've ever tried to carry a 32-inch long stick strapped to a backpack through the briars and swamp, you're going to get hung up on a lot of trees. Whereas a stick that's, you know, 14, 17, sometimes even 20 inches, at least with my pack that I use most of the time, that's shorter than the pack frame.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't get it snagged on anything. And I know that's the case with yours because you've sent me photos of your stick strapped to a bag and they're not cumbersome at all. You could
10 inches, you know, the pack.
Yeah, the pack's bigger than the bag, so anywhere you can get wearing a backpack, you can get with these sticks, whereas, you know, 5 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Exactly. 100% exactly right. And, like, what people probably don't realize, too, is, like, that's half the battle is the entry and exit. So it potentially even more than half the battle. So if you can get into your stand, your location, whatever, quietly, and you don't even have to worry about fumbling around on brush, like that's a super nice step up in the game.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, we wouldn't have made them if we didn't feel that they were a decent design, which granted, we didn't really make this for anyone other than ourselves. So, I mean, it just so happened that they're sweet, so.
Well, fellas, we're hitting an hour here. So where can the listeners find out more about you guys? Where can they check out the sticks? How do they get a hold of you if they got any questions?
Well, we're on Facebook, Catalyst Outdoors, Instagram at Catalyst Outdoors. We've got a website, which is catalyst-outdoors.com. You can email us at catalystoutdoors@outlook.com. You can reach out to me personally on either ServiceEye, you know, or my personal Facebook page. It's just Brady Carey. I've got a cell phone number, 812-910-1916. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions. And, you know, just to add on top, you know, I've been with ServiceEye for quite some time now, and we've made some pretty good friends and some, you know, we've had some pretty good times together and all that good stuff. And I've had a lot of people that have helped me out on there, and we're just kind of looking to return the favor. So if you are if you're a member of ServiceEye and you have been for a bit, for say you want a set of sticks, you can either reach out or, you know, here for too long, I'm sure we can work out some form of, you know, partnership deal to put us in the big list of names. You know, we want everybody in the ServiceEye group to have the nicest stuff. Having nice equipment is key, and a lot of people don't think that, but boy, it sure helps when you're 25 foot up in a tree to have really nice, dependable stuff. So, you know, big thanks to ServiceEye, big thanks to you and Jimmy and all that good stuff. You guys have an awesome program, and we appreciate y'all reaching out to us.
Yeah, man. We're glad we could do this. I know it's been in the works for a while. Schedules have been super hectic. But I really appreciate you guys getting on and making my life a little bit easier so that I don't have to field quite as much of the questions. But I certainly don't mind it because, like I said, you guys got a pretty kick-ass product, and it sounds like a whole lot more coming down the pipes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I'll have links for all your guys' information in the show notes, so the listeners can just find it there. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to the Whitetail Theories podcast.